Yeah, welcome back into the Joe Rose Show. Dono and Brian Monroe with you. Stunt and Steve is here. So, Brian, does this do anything for you? So, it has apparently been confirmed. Well, I'm not going to say confirmed, but it's been reported, according to NFL Network's Mike Garofolo, that the Houston Texans are going with Kyle Allen. He's going to start this game against the Dolphins because Davis Mills has a stellar 1-9-1 record on the season. Not to say that all their problems are his fault. It was just a crappy football team. But I don't know. Like, people talk about, you know, defenses having to prepare for a different quarterback kind of on short notice. I mean, Kyle Allen's been around, doesn't do much for me. Does this change the way you view this matchup on Sunday between the Dolphins and Texans?
Absolutely not. I mean, when you talk about a defensive coordinator, you know, preparing for different quarterbacks, that's if they do two different types of style. Like, you know, Kyle Allen's like David Mills. They're both drop back guys,
right?
You know? Yeah, Kyle Allen was highly recruited coming out of high school, but, you know, if you look back at the 1 year that he was pretty much a starter for the Panthers, he had 17 touchdowns and 16 interceptions. So he's going to give you the ball. Maybe we'll get one or two turnovers, but I don't think it changes anything for the Dolphins. You put in the, you know, implement your same defense. It's going to be a guy that's going to be more in the pocket. Yeah, he has a little better wheels than Mills, but it's not like he's a dynamic running back. So I think, you know, still they should be a, you know, what are they, 14-point favorite right now?
Yeah, 14 points.
I think it's, you know, it's going to be the same thing where you look at the Cleveland game where at first it's, they're excited, they're doing their things, they're staying in the game, and then all of a sudden the Dolphins just pull away and do what they do.
Kyle Allen, he started 17 NFL games in his career, most recently with Washington in 2020, whatever they were called then, football team, I think they were called at that point. He's completed 63.1% of his passes for 43, and it's basically a season he's played as a starter, like a full season total. 4,300 passing yards, 24 touchdowns, 17 interceptions, with an 84.9 passer rating. But I'm with you. This doesn't change really anything in my mind, and I'm sure Mike McDaniel feels the same way. So I guess the question here is, for the betting public out there, do you think Dolphins minus 14? Is that a number you're interested in? Either way, would you take? Because for me, that's usually the type of number where I say I'm sitting this one out. There's too much parity in the NFL. Even when a good team takes on a really bad team, minus 14, especially when it involves a team I root for because I don't want to ruin my weekend completely, I'm probably going to stay away from that one.
Yeah, I mean, those double-digit lines in the NFL is always scary, right? Because, you know, you look at, let's just look at yesterday, right? I don't think anybody covered, right? Because the Dolphins were, I mean, the Cowboys were either 9 or 9.5 favorite or 10, something around there.
Yeah, they won by 8, right?
And they won by 8. And then you look at the Bills, and they were probably, I don't know, 7.5, 8. They won by a field goal. So it's kind of one of those things where you just never know. And in those big lines, it's like, yeah, should the Dolphins cover? Absolutely. I mean, what did Houston do last game? I think they got 23-10 to Washington, a team that we know isn't great, playing better with Heinicke, but isn't great. I mean, you would assume that this Dolphins team should beat them 41-10, something like that, 41-17 maybe. But, you know, if somebody else wants to, you know, hit my cash app and give me some money to bet, I'll do it. But probably not going to put my money on the line for it.
Yeah. Well, the cash apps are open. By the way, one of the coolest things from yesterday, I was just watching the video replay of this. That Cowboys touchdown celebration where all their tight ends get in the Salvation Army bin and they do whack-a-mole.
Yeah. It was good. It was definitely good.
Was
even though the one tight end was having a struggle trying to jump in, he fell out twice.
I would have done the exact same thing. Was Zeke Elliott the first person to ever jump into the Salvation Army? Because I remember when he did it years ago in Dallas, like, I thought it was like a big deal. Like, he jumped into that big donation plate, and people were like, I don't know if you should do it. Is he disrespecting the Salvation Army by jumping inside the bell?
Disrespecting it? Come on. I mean, from what I remember, yes, but I mean, I don't put anything past the likes of T.O. playing for the Cowboys back in the day
and some
of those guys, but from my memory, he was the first one to jump in the Salvation Army, and I thought it was, you know, different and something that brings, you know, laughter to kids watching the game, not something that's like disrespecting. If anything, You're going to get more donations because it's free marketing.
Yeah, I think that's what ended up happening.
Exactly.
Like, when he jumped in, like, apparently, like, I think a bunch of donations came in just because of that.
You know how many millions of dollars it would take to have that type of marketing where you're literally on every single sports show, news show, and it's like, oh, what did he jump into? Salvation Army. Oh, what's that? What do you mean, what's that? Oh, Google it. Oh, yeah, I'll give him some money. Like, that's free advertisement. That's awesome.
Do you remember the Ice Bucket Challenge?
I do.
Did you do one of those?
I did.
I think I finally did one at some point. I was like the last person. I think once I did it, people were like, all right, we're good. No one needs to ever do this again. But yeah, every person in America, I think, did an Ice Bucket Challenge back in the day.
And the key was, okay, you did the Ice Bucket Challenge, but did you at least give a buck to the foundation? Like, that was the biggest thing. Like, I'm not telling everyone to give, you know, $100 because everyone goes through times, but a buck. You know, if you're going through, some adversity, at least give a dollar, do the Ice Bucket Challenge and challenge the next person and give a dollar, and it all adds up. But that was the biggest thing. Did you at least give a dollar?
Well, because the weird thing about the Ice Bucket Challenge was, like, supposedly the whole challenge was, you either do this or you have to give money to ALS research. So
you would have to take the ice bucket if you didn't want to give the money. So
which is weird, because, like, shouldn't you just do both?
Yeah, but again, not everybody's in a position to, you know, give away money, but right. I guess you're giving them awareness.
Publicity,
for it.
Yeah,
so you're giving them marketing if you can't do it. Okay, then that makes sense then. I'll take it back then as far as giving the dollar. At least if you participated and you gave more awareness and someone that followed you maybe gave a couple bucks to make up for it. So, okay, that's cool. But yeah, I didn't. Froze my butt off when I did it too. That thing, I actually put in ice water. Like, should have been smart. Like, some of these people put warm water and dumped it.
Oh, that's terrible. You can't do that.
Yeah, no, but you
I
know
did,
people
I did,
did that.
Ice water for sure.
Oh, I did the ice water, but I'm so used to doing, you know, back in college when we did the cold tubs on Thursdays. Still the best if you go through a hard workout or practice. That's still the best recovery. Fill up your tub, put some ice in there, soak 10 minutes, baby.
I was at a spa in Mexico, and they
had a spa. Look at this big time guy over here. Okay, spa, tell me about it.
They had a spa in Mexico, and I tried the cold tub. I was like, it's like when you try to drop like a crab into the water that's already boiling, and like they bounce right. Like, I bounced right out. Like, I defied physics, and I bounced right out of that. I did not want a second of that ice bath that they had going there. Like, thank you.
It is miserable, but all you have to do is get through the first minute or two until you go numb. You're good. The key to it is that, you know, you got to put your hand in your area to protect your guys.
That would have been useful info.
You got to hold your guys, and then you just get in there and just wait till your legs get numb, and then you're good. You're good to go. And then we used to just, the worst was actually when we were talking earlier, we went to Boise, we played in the game, and it was something like, I don't know, 20 degrees for one of our practices, 30 degrees, and they had the ice buckets outside ready to go with just mostly all ice. We're like, damn, Coach Vic. He goes, yeah, get in the bucket, baby. I'm like, oh my God, we about to die. But yeah,
oh my God,
it's still the best. You know, everyone talks about cryo and stuff. I'm like, where do you think it came from? Just get in the tub. You're going to feel so much better the next day.
305-567-0560 is how you get in. That's 305-567-0560. Texter writes in, England versus USA. Monroe is going to drink his tea, and I'm going to roll my tea. Let's go, USA freedom. And you know, Brian, I can understand if you say no, but since I'm hosting Hawk and Crowder today, would you be available for a post-match interview, or do you think you might be too chemically enhanced by that point?
I mean, listen, I might slip up as long as, you know, you got your guy ready for the dump button, you know, but I think I should be able to handle that one. Just depending on where I'm at. Depending on where I'm at and if I can hear.
I got you. Yeah. So I'll shoot you a text because I'm going to be on also today. I'll be on from 2 to 6. And and if Brian is available, you know, around 4 o'clock should be around the final whistle. If we can get him on. Texter writes in, Dono is in the spa eating quiche. Come on, man. How this turned into people bashing. Have you had a good quiche? It's a really nice item.
Quiche is whatever. Yeah, I'm with the texture on that one. Keisha's, I don't know. It just, do you really love quiche that much, Dono? Is that like a, I can't wait to have quiche this, you know, brunch? Is that what you're saying?
This was a surprisingly good quiche that was on my Thanksgiving table. Yeah, like I to be honest, I liked it almost as much as I liked the lasagna.
What? Wow. Yeah,
the quiche was really fire.
Huh. I guess I haven't had fire quiche like that.
Yeah, I think my favorite things that I had yesterday on Thanksgiving were the lasagna, the quiche, the dressing was very good, and the crispy Brussels sprouts. That was probably my my Mount Rushmore of best Thanksgiving dishes yesterday.
And see, like, you know, for me, like, Brussels sprouts are something I eat during the week, so it's certain things I pass on. Like, well, I don't eat this every week, so mashed potatoes, the dressing. I run towards that. The mac and cheese, run towards that. And the dessert, you know, those are the things that are must for me during Thanksgiving.
I'm going to crush some leftovers in like
what?
3 hours. It's not even funny.
I'm
going to
crush some leftovers. I can already smell it and taste it. Oh,
oh man. 305-567-0560. Joe Rose Show with Zach Krantz continues. Dono and Monroe and Stunt and Steve with you here on Black Friday on AM 560 Sports WQAM.
Yeah. No cap.
So it's just looking at the, I think this is the most updated Dolphins injury report, the one that came out yesterday. Easy to miss it because it was Thanksgiving yesterday. The injury report for today has not come out yet, but this is courtesy of DolphinsWire.com. The Miami Dolphins held another practice on Thursday. The only non-participants were left tackle Teron Armstead, who basically doesn't have to practice, punter Thomas Morstead, who was ill, and running back Raheem Mostert with a knee. Armstead has been limited on Wednesday. Limited participants included linebacker Jerome Baker, quarterback Teddy Bridgewater, and tight end Tanner Connor. Six players practiced fully. Cornerback Keon Crossan with a shoulder. Defensive lineman Raquan Davis, knee. Cornerback Kader Kohu, Darth Kader with a thumb. Tight end Hunter Long, concussion protocol. Wide receiver Jalen Waddle, shoulder. And tight end Durham Smythe with a hamstring. So that's the latest as of yesterday on the Dolphins injury report. For fantasy football reasons, I hope Raheem Mostert plays. A couple people were asking me about him. I'm expecting him to play. But you know what, Brian? This is one of those games where you can probably still win by 10 or more points even if he doesn't, especially with how good Jeff Wilson's been looking.
I mean, listen, Jeff Wilson is instantly, and you know what, I think he's, you know, obviously he feels disrespected because it's not like he wasn't running well for the 49ers, you know, and I know Elijah Mitchell was coming back, then you go get, you know, C-Mac, and he just looks like he has something to prove to the rest of the NFL, and I believe when they traded for him, he was like 14th or something in the league as far as yardage, so it wasn't like he was a bad pickup. Like, I was telling people, you know, we were doing a couple shows, I was like, he might have more impact than Bradley Chubb right away because he knows this offense, and the running game needs a spark. And now you get a 1-2 punch of guys that have been in the system with McDaniels that understand it and know exactly what the reads are, what to pick up. And he ain't a small dude. That's a big dude, and he runs hard. And you're going to need that down the stretch, especially when it comes to, quote-unquote, those cold games that you say you're going to need that running game. And to have the fast guy in Mozart and the bigger guy in Wilson and just, you know, making dudes miss, running people over, wearing you down, it's just one of those things you look at and say, okay, now this offense is looking like we thought with that dynamic run game, because we were having the big hits on offense with, you know, Tyreek Hill here, Jalen Waddle here, but the running game was sputtering. Now you're starting to see the complete playbook and what this offense can truly look like when you can open everything up. And I'm just eager to see how they keep progressing, because it's fun watching the guys on the outside, but man, having a running back just run through somebody's face and get those outside guys amped so they just keep blocking tougher and tougher, that's what it's all about. Like, those dudes can't wait to see their boy run somebody over and get amped up.
Well, it's amazing to me how bad of a signing Chase Edmonds ended up being, but then how quickly they fixed it.
Yeah.
Like both of those things were amazing. Because when the Dolphins signed Chase Edmonds, I'm thinking, man, this is the perfect guy for this offense, knowing the style that Mike McDaniel likes. And, you know, McDaniel, having coached against him, probably had a pretty good idea how Edmonds would fit, you know, being NFC West guys. And then Edmonds just, and I don't blame anyone but him, because, you know, he just couldn't catch. Like, yeah. how many times did he leave big plays and even touchdowns on the field because of just mistakes, mental mistakes? And it worked out so poorly for Edmonds. And then instead of getting stuck with that mistake, they're able to correct it with a series of trades where you end up bringing in, you talked about Wilson and what he's accomplished in the 49ers offense. And oh yeah, he also, like Raheem Mostert, has the familiarity and the relationship with Mike McDaniel. So it's amazing how bad of a screw up the Edmonds signing ended up being, but then how quickly they were able to correct it. That's a great job by Chris Greer to correct that mistake.
Yeah, and you look, and that's why the running back position has been devalued the way it has, right? Because you're not going to give the big numbers up anymore, only for certain elite guys, because if it doesn't work out, I can cut you, and it doesn't hit my cap too hard. I can go get another guy and plug and play right now that has more of an impact than most running backs they've had here in the last couple of years. And he's only been here for a couple games. So, yeah, I mean, you give the front office a round of applause for that, but that's a McDaniels guy, so he probably told them all the whole time, if you can get this guy, bring him in. You know, I would love to have him, you know. And then as soon as that's, I guarantee you, as soon as that C-Mac trade went through, McDaniels just said, hey, Chris, call. Put the word in, because he's not going to get any playing time anymore. He's not. So let's bring him over here. We can sell him on. He's going to make an impact, and immediately he's going to start. And he did. So kudos to them for always, you know, keeping an eye and ear out. But, yeah, man, that it has completely changed this offense where, man, we got 100-yard rushers and stuff like that, and you don't have to throw it, and we can bleed out the clock. Well, love it.
I want to go back to the Canes here for a second. Texter of the 786 writes in, he says, hot take, Breshard Smith is better than Xavier Restrepo in the slot. They're very different, Brian. Yeah. I think Breshard Smith, he's just more of a weapon, because you can line him up and use him so many different ways. If we're talking pure slot receiver, I would take X.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at it, I think they're, you know, a couple guys, we have this discussion all the time, players and stuff like that. I think they are completely two different receivers, right? Restrepo is that sure-handed guy, third down, make a catch. He's almost more possession than he is as that dynamic slot guy. Then Breshard is like a Swiss Army knife. You can put him in the backfield, he can run it, he can slip out of the backfield, you can do wheel routes. He's a quicker guy than a fast guy, and he could just do so much more as far as with the ball in his hand, making a guy miss than Restrepo. But Restrepo is that heartbeat that you want, that dog that might run somebody over, but also get everybody going, motivation-wise, be a leader. It's kind of difficult to say who would you rather have.
It's one of those things where, like, when they're both healthy, which hasn't happened at the same time a lot this year, don't you want to find ways to get them both on the field? Because it shouldn't be like, hey, these guys play the exact same position, and, you know, if one's on the field, the other is not. Like, there's got to be ways to use them both.
Oh, yeah. I mean, listen, I've said even last year when our running backs went down, I wish that the coaching staff went 20 personnel and put him in the backfield with Rooster, because it's such a mismatch where, okay, cool, now if he's in the backfield, you're talking about an outside linebacker or a safety coming down to guard him. That's a mismatch when it comes to speed. And you can still do that now. You can still put Restrepo in the slot, put him at 20 personnel, and put him in the backfield. And that's getting all of your playmakers on the field at once. I think you want to have a luxury of different styles of receivers and players, and that makes your offense that much more dynamic. You know, I don't think you need to compare the two because they're completely different receivers, you know, but you want to have both those type of receivers where it's third and five. I know where I'm going, Restrepo, and he's gonna catch it. You know, as a punt returner, he's sure-handed. He's going to at least catch the punt and maybe make one guy miss and get 10 yards. But then you have Breshard. He's quicker. I can bring him out of the backfield. I can slip him out this way. You know, and that's what you want in offense. You want complete teams. Now, where do we find four more receivers to complement them, Kobe Young, and have another outside receiver that can go up and get it. Have a speed guy that takes off the top that's a 4-3, 4-2 guy. Those are the type of guys that we need to bring in here in this signing period or this transfer portal window.
Yep, no doubt about that. Somebody writes in, Dono, do you know where they eat a lot of quiche? In Milpitas, California. Or as I famously said, Milpenis.
I'm sorry, but that's one of the best lines I've heard.
Oh, man.
And I know they got you, but listen, it's pure gold. It's pure gold. It is pure gold.
I'm just glad Bo wasn't, like, sincerely upset about it because he's a very large man. I don't want Bo pissed at me. And I don't want to be banned from Bo campers because they got some good food and drinks out there. So I'm glad we were able to smooth that one over. Milpitas, California.
Oh, I love that one. Yeah, they told me that when I was dying.
Oh, man. But by the way, I know you know things. You know more things than you can let on because I'm always curious about certain recruiting things with the Canes.
Yeah.
You know, we talked a little earlier about Chris Johnson, 4-star running back from Dillard. And I feel like Miami is at least a slight favorite for him, but it's a battle with Ole Miss.
Mm-hmm.
What about Mark Fletcher, who decommitted from Ohio State a couple weeks ago? I know the Florida fans are super cocky. And by the way, if you want unreliable recruiting information, listen to the so-called experts from Florida because they think that they're flipping Miami's entire class. Now, they flipped Rashada. I give them credit for that. It is what it is. But they literally think they're flipping Miami's entire class. And anytime a player takes a visit, they think that player's coming 100%. So, Brian, it was about a week and a half ago, and maybe they'll get him. We'll see. But about a week and a half ago, Mark Fletcher had a visit to Florida, an unofficial visit. And like I know some people who are like alleged insiders who because I'm kind of in that community, people who cover Florida recruiting, and they were telling me they're like, oh yeah, the staff being Billy Napier and stuff, they're expecting Fletcher to commit by the weekend. That was last weekend.
Hmm.
Like they really thought he's going to commit this weekend. He's kept his recruitment open. We'll see if he visits Miami. He's visiting Florida for an official visit December 9th. We're hoping we can get him in Miami December 16th. Do you hear any buzz on Fletcher? Because Miami needs running backs, and I like him a lot from American Heritage. Do you think they might be able to get him?
I mean, yeah. I mean, you think the two names on the board are South Florida guys, right? You got Chris Johnson, yep. You got Fletcher. Those are your guy. One's a speed guy. One's a big back. I was a little surprised that he did decommit from Ohio State with the success they've had with their running game and their team. But yeah, it's from what I've been told, it's a battle between us and UF. I don't think anybody at the moment has a slight edge. I think he's going to do what he's going to do. He's going to take his visits. NIL will probably come in there because Florida is offering money as much as their fans like to say they're not.
I thought everyone who goes to Florida plays for free,
absolutely not. That's why they have the Gator Collective, even though they couldn't get it together in the first year.
Right.
Yeah, they're doing what they got to do to get their guys in. And you're right, they did flip Jaden Rashada. Kudos to him. He got a good paycheck to go there. But again, they thought they were getting the number one cornerback in the country, and we got him out of Gator Country. And they also thought they were going to get the number one tackle, Francis Maugoa, and we got him. And then they also thought they were going to get the linebacker from Orlando. We got him. So three for one.
Oh, by the way, they still, if you go on the Gator boards, they still think they're getting all those guys. Like they still think that, like, Maui Goa and Bryant and I don't know who else they want. Jaden Wayne, they probably want. Like they think anybody in Miami's class that's a 4-star or above, they think they're flipping them all.
I mean, listen, I said it earlier in the show, you never know with 17-year-old kids what they're going to do. But when you have so many of them being vocal and coming out and saying stuff on Twitter like, yeah, I'm done. I'm not visiting Florida. I'm 100% committed. Doesn't matter what happens. Like those are the type of ones that you listen and say, well, sounds about right. The guys that you always worry about in any school, whether it's flipping, is when they're not very vocal about the school that they're committed to, or they don't go to games and get closer with their recruited their class, you know. And you know, Jaden Rashada never really spoke up during the year, and he never really went to a game, I don't think, the whole year. So it's not surprising that he was the one that flipped. But the rest of the class, they're pretty vocal and pretty much saying that this is where I'm going and I can't wait to play, you know, be an early enrollee. And I think they have something like 16 or 15 that plan on being at Miami in January. So I'm not too worried about the recruiting class. I think you know, Coach Cristobal, a lot of the guys he's made these relationships when they were in eighth grade and ninth grade, that it's not something that I've known him for a year. It's something that I've, you know, got this bond and this trust and this family father figure like that I want to play for him, and I know what he's done with other players. I want to be developed by him. So I'm not worried about that. I think there's some other big names on the board that they're going to close well. I expect this class to, you know, finish probably 5 to 7 range as far as rankings, because
yeah, I could see that.
There's such big names left with, you know, the Reuben Baines of the world that's a legacy player, and you got the offensive tackle.
I'm worried about that one. I'm really worried
about
that
one. That one is because, you know, SEC, and there's a, you know, it's SEC, and I get it. And sometimes Miami kids want to leave Miami and go see different parts of the world, and I don't blame them. And it's cool. But there's still some heavy hitters out there that are 4 high 4 stars and 5 stars that they're in the running. And by the way, look at the way Mario closed last year within being 2 months on the job. Yep. 3 kids that weren't even thinking about coming to Miami. You flip Skinner from Alabama. You get Citizen, the running back in SEC country from LSU in Florida. Then you get Nigelie Kelly, who was going to Oregon or somewhere else, because he also said, I wasn't going to Miami. You know, I didn't get along with the coaching staff. And then you got Cyrus Moss from Las Vegas, who was probably going to the Pac-12. And those are all guys that went with Mario. So one thing I know with Mario and his staff, they're going to close well. So
yeah.
I'm not worried. I mean, yeah, maybe you lose another guy. Cool. He's going to pick up more impactful players, so I'm cool.
Amen to that. All right, final segment of the Joe Rose Show coming up next here on AM 560 Sports WQAM. I'm getting a little pumped for some World Cup action later today, 2 p.m. It's America versus Brian Monroe and the Redcoats.
England!
I was just watching the video during the break on Talk Sport, which is like an English channel, when they were talking about how they would basically take the entire England starting 11 over every player on Brazil.
Why do they smoke?
Yeah, I would take John Stones. Yeah, taking him. Marquinhos, not a good player. Like, they're going through like the whole lineup, and
Marquinhos,
they're taking everybody.
Over Stones, come on, is that?
Ugh.
And now you got Rich Arlson that's balling for Brazil.
Oh, he is balling.
And it almost looks like you have that killer that they haven't had in a long time, that true number 9. You know, like, you know, obviously the real Ronaldo and back in the day, Romario.
R9, baby.
You know, when you had those type of players in their midfielder with Casemiro. And, I mean, listen, they are absolutely disgustingly loaded. It is just, they are stacked. And, you know, it's going to be one of those teams that, even though you don't root for them as per se, you appreciate the style of play and the players that you have, that you can't miss that game. And that's the reason why they call it the beautiful game, the way that they play it, the dancing, the flair, the ladies in the crowd. Like, it's just one of those things where, you know, I got to find a Brazilian watch party, because I don't have a Colombian watch party this World Cup. So I need my Brazilian fans out there. Let me know in Miami, where's the Brazilian watch party? I think the next game is Monday at 11. I'll be there. I'll pull up.
Somebody's got to know where the Brazilian watch party is. It's got to be a lot better than like the England watch parties, because Brian, when Italy defeated England in the Euro final about a year and a half ago, I watched it at a restaurant that was basically an England watch party, and I was trolling all of them, you know, beans on toast, all whatever they were up to. I was trolling them the entire game, and it was pretty glorious. But yeah, the female situation was not great at the England watch. I'm sure it's a lot better at some of these Brazil watch parties.
Oh, definitely. I mean, we don't really have a huge English, you know, a lot of
people. Well, some of them are huge.
Yeah, no, some of them are huge, but we don't have like a big population in Miami with that.
Right.
Like, you got to go to like, you know, the Irish pubs or something. Like, there's the one we watch in downtown. It's called the All Dubliner downtown Miami. And that got lit. It got real fun to watch the games. But yeah, now it ain't known for that. Now, you go overseas and you go into London and Manchester, you're going to find some things where you're going to be like, okay, you're right. They hold their own over there. But over here, nah. You see the ones that go to Disney where their Adidas track uniforms burnt red like my mom does. I'm like, I feel bad for them. But those are the ones you really see over here. But yeah, they got some things over there. But nah, they're not known for that.
Well, what do you think about like couple of the teams that have just suffered shocking upsets so far. Because I came into this tournament thinking, to me, like Argentina, one of the favorites. Yeah. Are we writing them off because they got shocked by Saudi Arabia, or do we think they can still bounce back and make a deep run? Because Argentina's loaded with talent. I think Germany has been overrated recently. Like they didn't make it through the group last time, and it's been a down period for the German national team. But they shouldn't have lost to Japan. Do we write these teams off already, or are we going to see some teams that we're going to be shocked don't get through the group?
I don't think you write off Argentina because, you know, last World Cup, I believe they lost to Croatia in the group stage 3-0, and they still made it out of the group. And then, you know, being Italian, you guys have lost group stages and went on and won the whole thing. So
that's right.
I don't think it says they're absolutely done because Argentina's group wasn't heavily, you know, loaded. But Germany, you got to be worried about them because they play Spain next. And Spain, to me, has looked like the best team out of all of the Group 1 games, you know, winning 7-0, just the possession that they had, that they have to at least get a point. If they don't get a point, they're out the World Cup, pretty much.
You got to take account who they played.
I don't,
though.
Yeah. Go ahead, Steve.
I said, you got to take account who they played as well. Spain.
Right. And they ran up the score.
Nothing.
Listen, they ran.
I would put Brazil because I feel like Brazil's opponent was better than Costa Rica.
Yeah, but you got to remember, Costa Rica isn't terrible. They're normally like that giant killer. What was it, 2014?
It was 14. They made it to the quarters. Yeah.
I don't think they're a team that's like intimidated. Like you come on and be like, oh, damn, we're playing this team. We're not going to be able to win.
It's a cruise ship port.
I think it was more stylistically they couldn't keep up with the Spanish style of soccer with the possession and everything else like that. They couldn't hold the ball.
By the way, I hate tiki taka. I just because people fall. I despise it, man. Like when you get the ball, cut in, try to score. My favorite types of wins, Brian. It's why Antonio Conte is one of my favorite managers, and I liked vintage Mourinho, not the Mourinho from like the last 10 years, like vintage Jose Mourinho. When you can win a game like 3-0, 3-1, when you've got 35% of the possession and you're so decisive on the counter, that's what I love. The teams that dance around and make all the unnecessary passes and try to bore you to sleep, I'm not a fan of possession. I like decisiveness when you have the ball.
Hey, I'm with you on that. And, you know, that's your style of soccer. And you know what I forgot to mention is that Argentina plays Mexico Saturday.
That's a big game.
That's going to be lit in Miami, too, because you got the Argentina spots and the Mexican spots, obviously. But it's 2 o'clock Saturday, and we play at 8. We got a pregame at 4. So now I'm sitting there like, you know, conflicted. Like, can I get to the Mexican watch party or the Argentina watch party?
And you got
to
leave around halftime.
Get some dancing
though.
Going on, and then leave at halftime. Yeah. You know, that's going to be a fun game to watch in Miami as well, too, because, you know, I mean, listen, did you watch the first game with the Mexicans?
Yes.
I mean, I feel like 80,000 people were there from Mexico. It was awesome. Loved it. And I saw some people at different spots in Miami, and I was like, well, might have to go check out those parties too.
By the way, this is a great text. England is the Buffalo of European countries.
England is the come on,
it kind
bro.
Of is.
No, it's
it
not. Are you crazy? Do y'all know what London is? Do y'all know the city of London?
It's up there in the dreary north. It's cold. It's foggy all the time. Everyone I know who lives in England wants to get out and go to real countries like Italy, where it's beautiful everywhere you go.
I'm sorry. Have you been to London?
I've been to London, yeah.
Considered one of the best town.
But I went there for like the 3 days of the year where the weather is hospitable. Like I was there like in June or July.
Yeah, April, May. That's when we go to Ireland because that's normally nice.
Okay.
But, come on, London is like New York. It's one of the best cities that people want to live in the world. But, yeah, okay, that's cool. Call it Buffalo. That's fine.
Buffalo. It's the Buffalo of Europe. That's gonna just about do it for us. Huge shout-out to Stunt and Steve for producing the program and doing
a
fantastic
music.
Job. Great music. Huge shout-out to Don Bailey Jr. for joining us. And Brian Monroe, it's always nice working with you. And let the people know what they can expect from pregame tomorrow at 4 p.m. with you in Hollywood.
Well, you know, it's the last game of the year. It's senior night. You know, we're going to obviously break down the game and talk about the season and looking forward to the future as well with, you know, Coach Cristobal and his staff and some of the guys that I bring, you know, coming in. But, you know, we'll be able to see if Tyler Van Dyke can, you know, finish this thing out, or is it going to be a Jakari Brown again? And will this run game be able to pick back up? And, you know, hopefully this defense steps up, because it's a business decision, right? You got one of the best running backs in the ACC, and you got it's a business decision. Do you want to tackle him? It's your last game for some of these seniors and juniors that might want to jump and end it on the right note.
Got to slow down a Abanikanda. I'm going to be on post game tomorrow with Malik Rozier till like 1:30 in the morning. I'm going to have my coffee tomorrow. And I'm back on the station today, 2 to 6 p.m. We'll be watching along USA England for the first couple of hours of the show. I'm going to try to enjoy that without like doing play by play, which could get us shut off the air. So I'm going to try to do it in a way that's like, you know, but we'll keep you updated on the game. That's for sure. Maybe we'll talk to Brian after the game goes final. And we'll have some fun today, 2 p.m. on AM 560 Sports WQAM.